Beyond the Reef, written by Alexander Kent and read by Michael Jaston.
Chapter 1. Band of Brothers. The normally sheltered waters of Portsmouth Harbour seemed to cringe under the intensity of a biting northeasterly, which had been blowing for some 12 hours. The whole anchorage was transformed into an endless mass of cruising whitecaps, with lively cat's paws to mark its progress around the many black and buff hulls of moored men of war, making them tug violently at their cables. It was late March, a time when winter was still reluctant to release its grip, and eager to display its latent power. One of the largest ships, recently warped from the dockyard, where she had suffered the indignities of repairs to the lower hull, was a second-rate Black Prince of 94 guns, her fresh paintwork and blacked-down rigging shining like glass from blown spray, and a brief rain squall, which even now had reached as far out as the Isle of Wight, a dull blur in the poor light. Black Prince was one of the most powerful of her kind, and to anyone but a true sailor, she would appear a symbol of sea power, the country's sure shield. The more experienced eye would recognize her empty yards, the canvas not yet sent up to give her life as well as strength. She was surrounded by lighters and dockyard longboats, while small armies of riggers and ropemakers moved busily about her decks, and the clatter of hammers and the squeak of tackles were evidence of the work being carried out in the deep holds and on the gun decks. Alone by the packed hammock nettings, Black Prince's captain stood at the quarterdeck rail and watched the comings and goings of seamen and dockyard workers, who in turn were supervised by the ship's warrant officers, the true backbone of any warship. Captain Valentine Keane tugged his hat still tighter across his fair hair, but was otherwise oblivious, even indifferent to the biting wind, and the fact that his flapping blue coat with its tarnished sea-going epaulettes was soaked through to his skin. Without looking, he knew that the men on watch near the deserted double wheel were very aware of his presence. A quartermaster, a boatswain's mate, and a small midshipman, who occasionally raised a telescope to peer at the signal tower or the Admiral's flagship nearby, a sodden flag curling and cracking from her main truck. Many of the men who had served the guns around him when they had fought and all but destroyed the big French three-decker off the coast of Denmark had been taken from his command while the ship had undergone repairs from that short, savage embrace, some for promotion to other vessels, others because, as the port admiral had put it, "My captains need men now, Captain Keane. You will have to wait." Keane allowed his mind to stray back over the battle, the terrible sight in the dawn when they had gone to assist Rear Admiral Herrick's Benbow in his defence of a 20-ship convoy destined for the invasion of Copenhagen. Shattered, burning hulks, screaming cavalry horses trapped below in the transports, and Benbow completely dismasted, her only other escort capsized, a total loss. Mercifully, Benbow had been towed to the Nore for docking. It would be too painful to see her here every waking day. A constant reminder, especially for Vice Admiral Sir Richard Bolitho, whose flag would soon break out again from this ship's foremast. Herrick had been Bolitho's oldest friend, but Keane had been more angered than saddened by Herrick's behaviour, both before and after Benbow's last fight. It might well be her last, too, he thought grimly. With the many ships they had seized from Copenhagen to bolster their own depleted fleets and squadrons, any dockyard might think twice before committing itself to such a programme of repairs and restoration. Keane thought of Bolitho, a man he cared for more than any other. He had served him as midshipman and lieutenant, and with him in the same squadron, until eventually he had become his flag captain. Keane imagined him now with his lovely Catherine, as he had done so often since their return to England. He had tried to close his mind to it, not to make comparisons. But he had wanted a love like theirs for himself, the same challenging passion which had captured the hearts of ordinary people everywhere, and had roused the fury of London society because of their open relationship. A scandal, they proclaimed. Keane sighed. He would give his soul to be in the same position.